Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our callers, because we don't have a guest this evening. This is Open Line Wednesday. So if you'd like to call in, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I thought we'd start out talking a little bit about torture. Are we justified in torturing people to do good? There's a fascinating article in the Sunday issue of the Washington Times, October 8, 2006, on page B5, and this is what it said. In 1943, in the Gestapo headquarters in Paris, Frenchmen were screaming in agony and pain, and all of France could hear them. Only one thing seemed impossible in any circumstances, that one day men should be made to scream by those acting in our name. So wrote French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre in an essay attached to the English translation of Henri Eligé's book, The Question. And of course, Sartre's words echo throughout America today. In 1963, while France was fighting a terrorist movement in its Algerian colony, and the French military commanders, ordered to destroy the terrorists, decided that they had to employ torture to do so. Sound familiar? Well, Mr. Eleg, a French journalist in Algiers, was arrested and tortured, and between his torture sessions and tiny handwritten notes smuggled out of his prison, he so vividly described his torture that the New York Times recommended the book be read, but only by people with a strong stomach. Torture and terrorism share a common parent, a noble cause. Corruption, doing evil for a worthy, noble reason. The terrorist kills for good. The oppressed Arab masses to free the Palestinians, to drive the infidels from the sacred land, to stop abortion. We torture for good in self-defense against a vicious, cold-blooded people who will kill us in a moment if we don't torture them. The mindset is the same. But Christianity and all the world's major religions tell us that to do evil to create good is wrong. Well, with that as a background, we simply ask, why is there no outcry from the Christian leaders of this country against the torture that we are inflicting on people that we've captured and accused of being terrorists? Some of them may be, many of them may not be, but they'll confess to anything. When you torture a person, they scream and scream and eventually they'll tell you whatever you want to hear. Those who have, of course, involved in interrogation realize that information obtained by torture is not valid because people will confess to anything if you inflict enough pain on them. And how can a moral country, fashioned under God, stoop to the level we are today? And where is the outcry from the Christian church? Well, we have Steve calling from Chicago. Steve, how are you tonight?
Oh, pretty good. I need to, you because you're a physician. There is an article in Spiegel German magazine. It was called The Polytrauma of War, and it was talking about the severity of injuries in Afghanistan and Iraq requires new forms of rehabilitation. If I could, there were some excerpts I'd like to. As of early October 2006, the number of American soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan was 3,094. Number of injured soldiers was 21,649.
Hold that thought. We'll be right here in just a moment, Steve. Just hang right on.
Okay.
All right, Steve, go right ahead.
And it goes on further to say that 7 injured soldiers for every dead one during the Vietnam War, the ratio was 2 or 3 to 1. Now, here's where it gets into the part that I think is getting interesting. More than 3,000 American soldiers have suffered brain damage in Afghanistan and Iraq. Many of the victims are, of course, hardly 20 years old. and many of them will require special treatment for the next 5, 6, or 7 decades. A joint study conducted by Harvard and Columbia Universities estimated that the cost of caring for them will be at least $35 billion. Many of these soldiers affected haven't just suffered brain damage. They've also been mutilated so badly or have suffered so many severe burns that the term polytrauma has become common for military doctors. Now, here's an interesting point. The number of soldiers with these types of injuries is so high that the U.S. government had to create 4 so-called polytrauma rehabilitation centers last year. One in Palo Alto, one in Tampa, one in Richmond, Virginia, and one in Minneapolis. And here's the part that's something else. And these are shielded from the public.
I think, of course, Steve, that they're lying to us on many things. About a third of the veterans who are returning from Iraq today, within a couple of months, are seriously ill. They call them post-traumatic stress. They can't think. They have all sorts of aches and pains. And well, I don't think it is, whether it's depleted uranium, whether it's, of course, use the experimental vaccines on them. We don't know what it is, but a third of those, and we've sent over 1 million people over there. So we're talking several hundred thousand people are ill coming home again. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to do what we're doing with our soldiers? What you're never going to be told is what I learned from one of our consultants, Doug Rocky, who was the expert on depleted uranium. He gave me the site, the Veterans Administration site, that it points out that almost 80,000 of the veterans of the first Gulf War are dead, over 80,000 of them. These are young, healthy people, remember, in the prime of life. Over 80,000 of them are dead since the last 15 years. You're never going to read those figures. If you'd like the pages, we'll be glad to send them to you from the government's own Veterans Administration statistics. But they cannot let the American people know what we did to the veterans of the first Gulf War and what we're doing to those young people today. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to destroy the youth, the men who would ordinarily be fighting for our freedom?
It's really incomprehensible. You know, in these cases, they were performing decompressive craniectomies. They'd remove a full third of the skull cap.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, Steve. Well, Steve was talking about so many of the young men who are coming back now. They're not dead. They're simply the living dead. And many of them, of course, had severe brain injuries and have had to have extensive decompression of their brains. And they'll never be right mentally again. Those have lost arms and legs and their vision and their hearing. Well, they may be able to function, but you destroy their brains. They're never the same again. War is hell, and this is the worst war, and this war was totally unnecessary because we never went into Afghanistan to try to get Osama bin Laden. We let him escape intentionally, and those of you who haven't read the book we carry called Crude Politics, interviews with the people from the special forces who wanted to go after Osama bin Laden. They weren't allowed to. They sent in people who supported him to catch him, surrounded him on two sides, and you know what happened? We went the other way. I talked to the author of the book, who told me that the publisher wouldn't circulate the book for some strange reason, printed 40,000 copies, and then refused to try to disseminate it. Is it possible that they don't want the American people to know we never tried to get Osama bin Laden? Anybody questions that? We have an article out of the Washington Times, and I believe it was October 7th, interviewing one of the highest-ranking American people who said, our policy is not to get Osama bin Laden first. It's Osama bin Laden last. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify this war? If you'd like to see the article, we'd be glad to send you a copy. I share your concern. I think it's criminal. I think that someday people are going to have to ask, you know, did our leaders deceive us? Did they really try to stop terrorism, or is this all a scam? Well, anything else, Steve?
Yeah, like I say, going back to that, you know, the PR, you see somebody that's maybe a double amputee or something like that, but you never see these cases, and I hate to call them what they did from World War One, the basket cases. As they say, that you just don't see that in the public because that's the way that they censor the press in this country.
It's just like they're not showing the flag-draped coffins when they come home either. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I remember that. We had that from Vietnam.
Oh, but they're not showing them now because they're manipulating how we look at things. They want us, of course, not to feel the horror of this war. And as long as it's not our son or our brother or our father who's dying, well, we're really not that concerned about it, but we should be, because every one of those individuals we're sending over there is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. And every one of the Muslims who's killed over there, and the estimates are up to 600,000, and that's just since we began this war. Remember, we killed probably close to 2 million, including 500,000 children during the 10 years of our embargo, when they couldn't get food, they couldn't get medicines, they couldn't get any medical supplies in there. We put an absolute embargo on those people, and 500,000 children died between 1991 and 2000. Where is the outcry about that here in America?
I don't know. What about Physicians for Peace? Don't they have anything?
I really can't tell anything about it, Steve. You're going to have to look it up and let us know. Maybe you can give us a call again next week.
All right.
God bless. Hey, thanks very much. And let's go to Darren, who's calling from Colorado Springs. And that's in Colorado, of course. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. And, of course, this is Open Line Wednesday. Hi, Darren. How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. It's good to talk to you.
How do you have a question or comment?
Well, I've never been at ease with this all this talk of torture that's been coming around the last few years. I can't even believe that such a thing's being spoken of so blatantly, and so many people are receiving it so easily, you know.
But I share your concern, and I'm really concerned, because where are the Christian leaders who are speaking out against it?
Well, and another point you've brought up, and I agree with, is people seem to have no problem with dead Iraqi citizens. That really those lives don't count. We keep a tally of our own losses, but those people that are dying over there, for some reason they're insignificant. It's they deserve to die or something like that. I don't understand how we can discount those people as humanity lost. It's really a bizarre thing. The way this is being framed and sold, and the way the people are going along with it. But I do have a sense of hypocrisy in the torture issue. I remember when I was a younger man, I was arrested at one point for having illegal substances, okay? And I was in the jail cell for a few days, and then one day they brought me down to see the sheriff. And I sat in the sheriff's office, and he said, "Darren, you know people who are selling drugs and who have drugs, and you could give us names, and it would help us to bring this problem to an end. It would further our cause, and things could go easier on you if you would cooperate. You know, the state's attorney would be willing to work with you, and things could go easier for you if you give us names." And I could have given him names, but I had a sense of honor. You know, these are my friends or people I thought I didn't want to betray. And I said, "No, I can't give you any names. I'm not going to cooperate with you." And I didn't. Now, if he had gotten out a blowtorch and a pair of pliers, or if he had, like, taken his heel and started breaking my fingers one at a time, you know what? I would have given him any name he wanted. I would have thought of everybody I ever could have thought of. That, you know, if he would have actually started to physically harm me, I doubt if my resolve would have been strong enough to resist telling him what he wanted to know. And now, many years on, I look back on that, and I can see where torture would have furthered the cause of getting the drugs off the street in that regard. But, and recently, I was up in the local community, and I saw a lot of people that we're in a certain area, and there's this issue of crystal methadrine in the United States, and it's prevalent here. Now, I've never tried this stuff, but I know people are using it, and it's a big problem in the United States, this crystal methadrine. But we can't torture people to find out where they're getting their drugs. But I'll tell you what, if you did torture people to find out where the drugs were coming from, I bet you'd get answers.
Yes, but they wouldn't be accurate answers. You can't. In other words, people will say anything. And hey, do you really think that a dedicated, you know, member of Al-Qaeda wouldn't lie to you?
Well, no.
And of course they would.
Let's say it's not drugs. Let's say the guy's got plastic explosives in a backpack. And you have one of these road checkpoints, and the guy gets stopped. and he's got all this plastic explosive in a backpack. Now, what are you doing with that? Where'd you get that? He says, I will not tell you. You will not get that information from me. And you say, oh yes, we will. And you do whatever you can to persuade him to tell you where he might have gotten his plastic explosive. See, I don't have any plastic explosives. If you started breaking my fingers and telling me you wanted to know where plastic explosives were, I would never be able to tell you.
Now, of course, you would come up with another alternative. You would lie to them, and you would give them an excuse. You would give them an answer. You would give them the answer that they wanted.
Yeah, I'd tell you whatever I could think of to make you stop doing that.
And so this is not an efficient means to do of getting information. And the trouble is that the people who are doing it know that, at least the people at the very top. There really are people, Darren, who enjoy inflicting pain on others. We call them sadists.
Well,
there's a form of perversion. But we have people with that mentality, unfortunately, in our government. We have a lot of good people, I'm sure, doing what they're told to do. But at the very top, we have very wicked people.
Well, now, Dr. Stan, I respect you, sir, and I agree with you. And Megula, Dr. Megula from the Germans, is famous for what you're describing, that he enjoyed inflicting the pain on other human beings. And I myself cannot imagine doing anything like that to another human being. I think it falls under the golden rule to do unto others as you'd have them to do unto you, and to intentionally hurt a person would just go against my grain. I can't see myself performing these acts on another human being.
Well, that's because you see you have a moral conscience, but there are some people without it. Dr. Mengele was allowed to escape to South America. He was helped by MI6 and by CIA. Through the years, I've talked to three different people who claim that they met and talked to Dr. Mengele here in the United States. We do know that under Operation Paperclip, they brought many of the most vicious of the Nazi criminals to America. Hey, we're just about out of time. What we really need to do is moral people in positions of leadership. Only when we have men who fear God in positions of leadership will we really be safe.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for the opportunity to speak.
God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us. All right, fine. Let's go to, let's see, is this Greg or is this Frank?
This is Frank, if you can hear me.
Oh, if we can hear you, this is fine, Frank.
Good
to have you
great.
With us. Frank's calling from West Virginia. What did you want to talk about tonight?
Yes, you brought up the issue of torture, and I'll just continue on the same subject, if you don't mind. There's a lot of people that really have surprised me since 9/11 with their response to the issue of torture. People claim Christ is their savior, for instance, even some ministers I know of. And it's really disturbing. It's very disturbing. It seems like they've bought into the psychology and the mass mind control, for lack of a better word, of the acceptance of it. And, you know, I was thinking through the Bible, okay, where does it address the issue of torture? I know our previous caller brought up a good verse concerning the golden rule that's mentioned several times in the Gospels. What I found is, at least in my limited study, is that it isn't addressed an awful lot like a lot of other sins. And in my opinion, this is but my opinion, is that it's presumed extremely evil.
And God's people
just don't do things like that.
Well, you see, this is what they did. They tortured Jesus Christ. They could have
sure
killed
did.
Him, but they tortured him. They beat him. They flogged him. They put the crown of thorns on his head. And what was his response? Forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Yeah.
And what is the response of our leaders in America today and of our Christian administration? Why, we don't call it torture. We would never condone torture, but we're going to do it anyway. And, of course, you know, I just don't understand. We have a serious moral problem. We have a serious sickness within the church today. Hey, anything else you want to say?
Yes, one
quick
thing.
Hold that thought then, and we'll be right back to it. Okay, go right ahead. Frank from West Virginia.
Okay. There's a passage in Hebrews chapter 11. The passage speaks about some of the heroes of faith, and near the end, you're familiar with this, Dr. Stan. And it says, and others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, and moreover of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, They were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered in about in sheepskins, goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. And I missed the part where it says, and others were tortured as well. So that certainly addresses what Christians will be going through and have gone through throughout the ages many times.
But of course, but you won't find any places where Christians or people who profess to be Christians or people who profess to be Christian rulers are validating and encouraging torturing their enemies.
Yes. And I was trying to figure out now, what is it about these preachers and these people who call themselves Christians? And I'm a Christian. I know you are too. But these other people that claim the name of Christ that yet condone that. And what's the problem? If they are saved, and I'm saying it's a big if, back in Romans 12:1, he says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
I think, Frank, what you have to realize is that we are victims of what we see on television, what we hear on the radio, what we read in newspapers, and they're doing everything they can to get us to hate the Muslims. It was very well coordinated immediately after the 9/11 attack. Why, Time magazine put out a special edition. I don't know if you can still get a copy of it, but I have one. And, you know, it was all about 9/11 with the vivid pictures, the sickening pictures. And then it concluded with this long essay on how we had to learn to hate, how we had to have a purple rage, how we had to learn to hate the people on the other side. And you can find that, at least quotations from that article, in my, I think it's my September 2001 newsletter, 2001 or 2000, September or October newsletter. This was planned a long time ago. Do you remember the day of the attack? And I don't know if you're watching television.
Oh, yes, I remember it clearly at work. I saw it. We have a TV at work. And
the little Palestinian children laughing and so happy, you know, about the Americans being killed. We don't know where those... whether it was shot, but they showed them on all of the networks. Why? To begin to build that hatred for the Muslims. And as today they're trying to get the Muslims to hate us, so we're being told we have to hate them. They're Islamic fascists, and so it's all right if you torture Islamic fascists, well, isn't it? Especially when you're going to protect us from all these terrorists who are trying to come here and kill us, and isn't it better to kill them on the streets of Baghdad than fight them on the streets of New York? We're 5 years since the attack, the one major attack in the United States. Our borders are wide open. This whole thing is a scam. There may be a handful of terrorists out there, but you see, if there was really an Islamic attack, the first thing they would have done, danger from terrorism, they would have sealed the border. And you have
Absolutely.
To ask yourself why they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's exactly my point, and you expressed it very well. These people that agree with the torture are very worldly people, worldly-minded. They are thinking in terms of what you said, this world and what's put on the media, and it was well orchestrated. However,
hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Go ahead. Well, we've got Frank on the line from West Virginia. We're going to have to let you go. Why don't you just sort of wrap up your thought there?
I sure will. However, we as Christians certainly need to have discernment, and I appreciate your show for bringing out much of this discernment, which we should all have, and we should certainly lead the way and speak out whenever possible, and speaking to our friends and churches and so forth. But thank you, Dr. Stan. Appreciate the time.
God bless you. Why don't you get all those people back there in West Virginia listening, will you?
I'm trying.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right.
Well, let's
bye-bye.
Go to Greg, who's calling us from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Greg.
Yes, sir. Hey, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How about you?
I'm fine. It's so good to talk to you. I just wanted to call and thank you. I started picking up your show a few months ago when I read your book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and I thought that was such a fascinating book, and I just started catching your radio show, and I just wanted to call you and thank you about one thing in particular. I'm a pharmacist, and I pay attention in particular to, you know, health subjects, and you had a Dr. Blaylock on recently talking about mercury.
Right.
And gee whiz, it just blew my mind. I never knew all this, and it was amazing. I picked up another book called Evidence of Harm about this whole autism epidemic and how these this thimerosal and these vaccines has just wreaked havoc among these children. It's just it's such a shocking thing, and so now we're dealing with the flu shots that have the 25 micrograms of mercury per dose, and I think it's such a horrible thing. The company I work for has tried to get me to get the shots, and I refuse to do it. Not for that particular reason, but for other reasons as well. But now I just, there's no way I'd ever do it, and I just want to thank you for bringing that subject to light because it's such an important thing.
Well, yeah, thank you. This is my job, is to try to get the information out. Do you remember methylate, that sort of red substance we used to put on the skin all the time?
Right. I remember as a child, my mother had a bottle in the medicine cabinet, and I used to love to put it on just to make my skin turn orange.
So, of course, yeah, then, of course, they found out that this contained mercury. It was really a thimerosal compound.
Right.
And they outlawed it. It was illegal to put it on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too toxic to put on the skin, but it's all right to inject into our children or to give to pregnant women. What sort of madness is that unless there is another agenda behind this?
Well, right, and I even emailed the CDC because I was just so shocked that they still recommend pregnant women get this shot. And, of course, at least the children now are not getting as much of it. But, yeah, pregnant women, I mean, the brain is developing in the womb, and here we are injecting mercury into the woman.
So we've got a great new video put out by Dr. Ayob. It's from our last conference, and he's actually a radiologist, but he's really does this almost full-time now. He works half-time at radiology and the other half-time researching, and his discussion of really the mercury that they're giving to our pregnant women and that they're giving to our six-month-old children, and they know that it increases the rate of abortion. Infertility, in the first generation of animals, but in the second generation, the third generation, and I believe this is why they're giving it in Africa to the natives there, to the blacks there, and it is part of their genocidal policy. And it's so difficult to believe anybody think could be that wicked.
Right.
All you need to do is go into Botswana today, where the U.S. Census Bureau goes down and collects statistics on the incidence of the AIDS epidemic, and in Botswana, 46% of the pregnant women in Botswana are HIV infected. They're all going to die. That is either the greatest public health failure of all time,
sure,
or successful genocidal policy. And what are they doing to correct the public health policy? Nothing. They're going to continue doing the same thing. Well, that, I think it's pretty obvious what they're up to.
Shocking, very, very shocking. And I think it's one of these situations where, at least in this country, people aren't dropping dead from the mercury, but it just damages them in so many ways. And I can't understand, who would want to harm people like that. And it just,
yeah. But who would want to kill 50 million unborn children in America?
Sure.
And when you understand there really are people who hate humanity, who want to kill unborn children, who relish in this sort of thing, well, then you can begin to understand the mentality of what we're up against. And you go back and you read the things put out by Family Planning Perspective and how back in 1970 we actually have this page, if anybody would like to read it, they're talking, how are we going to control population? Well, we'll discourage people getting married. We'll keep the marriage tax on. We'll put something in the water to control fertility. We'll encourage abortion. We'll encourage homosexuality. Encourage homosexuality? Yeah, we'll encourage homosexuality. This is why all this falter all about homosexuality. It's not a gay lifestyle. It's a tragic lifestyle. These people need our pity. They need our help. And yet they're doing everything they can to turn the Christians against the homosexuals and the homosexuals against the Christians. It's the same old game. They play it all the time. Well, anything else you'd like to say, Greg?
I think that was it, but I wanted to thank you, and I really appreciate listening to your show.
God bless, and thanks so very much.
You too.
Well, that was Greg calling from Savannah, Georgia, and we'll be right back in just a moment with our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got a couple of lines open. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Ray calling from, of all places, Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good. I want to suggest that the reason why there's not such an outcry about torture, among other things, is because I believe that this president has the Protestant, a large number of the Protestant churches and the conservative Catholics in his pocket because of the faith-based initiatives. It's really frightening to me. There's a new documentary out called The Jesus Camp. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it's a film about how in certain states in the South, I believe, little kids are being trained to equate President Bush as some kind of a god. And it's true. There's a documentary about it. And, I'm really upset about what's going on with religion, because I can see that a lot of these people, and the Catholic Church even, are completely blind. It's like they have the blinders on, because the president said he was pro-life. They support him. But he's really pro-death.
Well, I share your concern, and I really believe that there's a spiritual blindness out there. People have always wanted to have somebody they could believe in. And I don't know that you've probably heard me say this before, but they got together about 25 of the Christian leaders of America, and why I was asked to be there, I don't know. But, these were the people, I won't mention their names, but they are the people who lead the conservative Christian movement. We actually interviewed all of the people who are running for the presidency in the year 2000, and I guess we actually interviewed them in 1999, because the election process was going to go on in 2000. And, it was really amazing to me that when George W. Bush was there, literally all these people supported him. We were supposed to have a meeting together and sit down and talk about it. They never had a meeting at all. They all just rallied behind him because he could win. And because he, when asked, the question about his Christianity, he said that Billy Graham had led him to the Lord. And if you question that, it was sort of your questioning the integrity of Billy Graham. And I think there were only two out of the people who were there at the final session, John Stormer and myself, who could see through this man that he was not what he purported to be. Because he looked me right in the eye and he lied to me. And Christians don't do that. But anyway, be that as it may, I share your concern about what's happening today. Hold on just a minute, Ray, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and he's simply saying he's very concerned about the fact that the conservative Catholics and the conservative evangelical Christians are solidly behind the president. They refuse to actually be critical, no matter what he does, because he professes to be pro-life, and they seem to tolerate the war. They seem to be willing to tolerate the torture. They seem to be willing to tolerate so many things that are going on in the way of massive increased government spending, and of course, massive increase in the deficits, and the progressive destruction of the sovereignty of our nation, and this move towards doing away with America's individual unique nation. We're beginning to build this whole idea of joining together Mexico and Canada and the United States. But it's almost as if George W. Bush can do no wrong. And I think that we have to stand up and be critical of him when he does the wrong thing. And I believe that, condoning torture cannot be condoned. Anything else you'd like to say before we let you go, Ray?
Yeah, there's one other thing. I wondered whether Henry Kissinger was still an active member of the CFR. And
yes, he's still an active member of the CFR. He's also a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Okay, he's still doing his thing.
And don't forget that it was Henry Kissinger.
Oh, yeah.
It was Henry Kissinger who really was responsible for the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, of course, Richard Nixon wanted to pull out. Henry Kissinger wouldn't let him pull out and prolong that war for an additional four long, bloody years. And then, of course, Henry Kissinger is the major architect of this war. And if you read the latest book by Woodward, it's called State of Siege, he will tell you that the major advisor for George W. Bush and for Dick Cheney is Henry Kissinger. And Henry Kissinger says there is the only way out of Iraq is through victory. And I would like to suggest that Henry Kissinger, as much as anybody else, is responsible for what's happening. I believe that George Bush is simply a pawn in the hands of the real ruling elite, and I believe that Henry Kissinger, like Colonel House at the beginning of the last century, has the ability to control people's minds and manipulate them. I believe he is part of this Brotherhood of Darkness, one of the key coordinators of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, they have to rise to the top. I think cream and scum rises to the top, as far as that's concerned.
All right, fine. Anything else before we let you go, Ray?
That's about it.
God bless. Thanks very much. And well, let's see. I think we've got Roger calling from... all right, we lost Roger, so I guess our next line is line two. Okay, who's on line? Is this Roger?
Yeah, Roger. Thanks.
Okay, fine, Roger. And once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We do have a couple of lines open if you'd like to call. Okay, Roger, what did you like to talk about?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, I don't know how much more mileage that Bush is going to get out of his constantly recycled phrase of the last several weeks. We're constantly readjusting our strategies or tactics, whatever. It's more saleable than whack-a-mole, I guess. Whack one here, another two pop up there. But I think we have to spread the... the analysis that, you know, I mean, you can go through 1,000 different war games type scenarios or whatever and still conclude there's about zero possibility of any variant of this, we can't really call it Bush's vision, but this vision succeeding short of at least a quadrupling, quintupling of troops. That would be for Iraq alone, let alone expanding into Iran. And then to point out that any of these visions are well-nigh impossible without a substantial mass annihilation component thrown into the mix. Is that not correct?
Well, I believe that we are going to see a devastating war that is going to kill millions, if not hundreds of millions of people, and I believe many of them are going to be Americans. At the present time, apparently, there is a major task force, the Eisenhower Task Force, which is over there in the Persian Gulf. How many task forces are over there? I really don't know. I've had varying reports from various places, and so, but I do know that there's a concentration of naval ships over there in the Persian Gulf. Why would you put them there at this time? It's like poking a stick at the rattlesnake. You poke a stick at a rattlesnake, ordinarily he'll respond by striking back again.
Well,
it's almost like we want a provocation to get them to do something to justify going to war. And what is really bothers me very much, Roger, this is just before the elections.
I think
they're going to lose the elections unless, of course, the Iranians did something rash, and then, of course, there was an attack on one of our ships. It would be like the Gulf of Tonkin or the sinking of the battleship Maine or whatever it would be. Or maybe the Iranians wouldn't do anything. Maybe we'd do it ourselves. Maybe we'd make it up, but they could use that as a justification, of course, to rally the people behind the president.
Well, I think it is important to point out what I just said about without a mass annihilation component, and then ask how this can possibly be squeezed into a Christian just war theory.
Well, of course, you know, when you argue the Christian just war theory, why, of course, you have to start out with this concept that it's all right to kill to do good, and I don't believe it is. I don't believe any war is justified. I believe if we are attacked, we have a right to justify ourselves. We were not attacked by the people in Afghanistan. We were not attacked by the people in Iraq. And there's a serious question in my mind as to what happened on 9-1-1. And all we need to ask is the question is, if there is really a threat of Islamic terrorism, why does George Bush steadfastly refuse, of course, to close our southern border? And why did he object to the first investigation, the Joint Intelligence Committee investigation, and insist on censoring the report? And then why did he object to the 9-1-1 Commission and censor that report when 5 of the 10 commissioners came from the Council on Foreign Relations, one of them came from the Trilateral Commission, and the man who directed the whole thing, Philip Zelikow, was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and had co-written a book with Condoleezza Rice. Could we expect Philip Zelikow to be impartial investigating what the Bush administration had done when he was part of the Bush administration that brought this whole tragedy about?
Now there's some four or five or more planks to adjust anyone's just war theory, proportionality, and I forget the other several, but it's a pretty tight squeeze. I think impossible. And I heard a pretty good joke, if you'd care to.
Well, Rich, you got a full line here. Why don't you tell the joke, and then we'll let you.
Yeah, now it's based on J.R. Tolkien's Hobbit, where I guess the diminutive hero Frodo, is keeping Sauron, the evil Sauron, from assembling what one or three rings where he gets all the power. Anyway, the bumper sticker has it. Get Frodo. Bush has the ring.
Okay. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Roger. Okay, let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. And then if you'd like to give us a call, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I had to call after your previous caller a few minutes ago was talking about George Bush and how the kids are being programmed that, you know, he's a god or something like that. Well, I had two items about George Bush. One is, yes, I believe we are being programmed, not just the kids, that he is a god. I think often about the movie Gods and Generals, which was produced by Ted Turner. And I thought, well, this sounds like such a fantastic movie, but who wants to trust Ted Turner with it? So I had to think about that for a while, and I noticed that it came out in the theaters only a few months before we invaded Iraq. Was it Iraq or Afghanistan, actually, now? But what it did was it rallied, really. It was such an appealing movie to the Christians, especially the Christian men across the country. And it put them all on the warpath. It gave them a vision of their president as being amongst these gods and generals that were portrayed in the movie, and they basically gave our country permission. That was part of how we were being led by the nose into this. Every president has got, or every national leader has got to convince the public of the nation to believe in the war, whatever war such a leader is going to conduct. And that's part of how it was done with us. Hope you don't mind my using the word dimwit, like George Bush, as a president, running a war. This is one of the saddest jokes that has ever been put over on this country, and I'm trying to be soft about this. The other item about George Bush, anybody can get this off of Thomas, the government document website, legislation, H.R. 4814, was about George Bush signs Title X funding increase for 2005. What this did was gave $50 to $60 million more to Planned Parenthood, thereby increasing their funding by a very large amount.
Now, why would a Christian president fund Planned Parenthood, which is the leader, of course, of this whole pro-abortion movement?
Yeah, well, he's a pro-death kind of guy, or else he's just plain not thinking, which is more like, I don't think his brain is actually connected to anything.
Well,
he just does what he's told.
Let's put it this way. I believe that George Bush does pretty well what he's told to do. His speeches are written for him, and he reads them very well, sometimes.
Yeah. But he went ahead and signed this thing, and that's unforgivable. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I hope everybody will. You can go to thomas.loc.gov, and you can track it down pretty easy there. H.R. 4818, and just print it out and give it to your pastor. If your pastor believes in George Bush as a Christian man, just use this as a starting point.
Well, I think I would just remind everybody what George Bush promised us when we went to war with Afghanistan. We're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He just didn't say when we were going to get him dead or alive. And they refused to allow the special forces to go after him once he got into Pakistan, which we are financing. We control Pakistan because we give them, I don't know, $600 million a year. Why didn't we just send them some special forces to get them? We're told, oh, we couldn't do that. They're a sovereign nation. Hey, thanks very much.
Well, actually, anybody can get a copy of 911 Press for Truth, where there's a very interesting explanation of how we deliberately did not get Osama bin Laden.
And, of course, we have the same story told in a book we carry entitled we carry that 911 Press for the Truth, and the book is called Crude Politics, available from Radio Liberty, because apparently the publisher wasn't very interested in the disseminating. Hey, thanks so much,
okay,
Mike.
Sir.
Let's go to Rocky, who's calling from Dayton, Washington. Rocky, thanks for staying on, holding the line so long.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My question is, well, I know that there's thimerosal in the vaccines, but what about when you go to the dentist and have dental work done, and they give you a shot of Novocaine, or if you have some surgery done, and they give you some kind of local anesthetic there. Is there a risk of thimerosal, mercury, and these type of things?
No, there's not. That's certainly what they're doing is using lidocaine or carbocaine, and these are really fairly safe local anesthetics. But what you want to be careful of is what they're putting in your teeth, and if they're using so-called silver fillings, remember they're 50% mercury, they constantly vet. The extensive studies have been shown to show that they every time you take anything hot or you chew, why, of course, the mercury is vaporized, and it gets in your blood, it goes right to your brain. They've done these studies on sheep. We have two great 4 tape sets on mercury. And in Sweden today, they will not allow a mercury filling to be put in your mouth. They'll pay to take them out, and we should be taking them out all across America. And the American Dental Association is lying to the dentists and to the American people. 100 years ago, it was considered malpractice to put a mercury filling in. In fact, the American Dental Association was actually organized by the renegade dentists who wanted to put in the mercury fillings because they could be used so much more readily, but knowing full well they were toxic. And today, of course, it's become standard practice. That's where you really want to be worried when you go to the dentist.
Yeah, and this is why I ask, because I do have silver fillings from when I was younger, and I want to have those removed. And
But do not go just to any dentist. Go to the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, IAOMT, and look there and go to a dentist who's taken the courses and knows how to get it out. Otherwise, you could get mercury intoxication from getting them taken out. IAOMT.
IAOMT.
International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. And if you have trouble, getting there, why, give us a call off the air and we'll help you. But they have a list of the dentists who are trained. Get them taken out, but get them taken out by somebody who knows what they're doing.
Okay. Now, you could ask your dentist if they.
No, I would not ask your dentist. I would go to that list.
Really?
Every dentist is going to say, sure, there's nothing to it. He really doesn't know.
Okay.
And this is an organization of dentists who've taken special courses in actually getting those things out, because you can get a toxic dose of mercury in the process of taking them out, do more harm than good.
I see. Okay.
Anything else, Rocky?
No. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. God bless. And
God bless.
And let's go. I think the next one is, I'm not sure. I'll have to ask my producer who's next. We actually have Raiden in Vermont. Let's go to... Line 3 is Raiden. Is Rocky in Dayton? No, let's see. Who do we have on the line?
Dr. Stan.
Yeah, who is this?
This is Radkin in Vermont calling.
Okay, fine. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
I have a few of your tapes, and I just am so grateful for the research you've been doing for the last 40 years. I'm thinking of the one with Norman Dodd and the tax-exempt foundations and how... all that information has been kept from us intentionally.
You're absolutely right.
My question to you is that evil seems to be masked in so many different guises, like wolves in sheep's clothing.
Right.
Did you ever interview a Benjamin Friedman?
I don't recall. The name is sort of familiar. Who is he?
I heard a tape of him, of a speech he made in 1961, and he talks about Zionism. And I've also been told that we're not free to talk about Zionism in this country, yet they're free, much freer over in Israel. And so when I think of Zionism, I want to think of not just the good Jews, but people of all stripes and colors. They can be Christians who aren't really Christians. They can be fake Jews. They can be atheists. But they have this hidden agenda to control the world.
But you see, this is all part of the satanic agenda. This is what it's really all about. And there is a satanic element within the Protestant church. There's a satanic element within the Catholic church. And there's a satanic element within the Jewish religion as well. We have to understand that. And we've put together a great new four-tape set called The Holocaust. And, of course, it has an interview with Barry Sammons, who, even though he is a secular Jew, really understands the satanic movement that's there. Hey, anything else you want to ask before we let you go?
I've heard Barry Sammons and was very impressed with the line he said, "My people, I feel so sorry for them. They're so ignorant. They don't realize how they're being used."
They are, and I think Israel's being set up to be destroyed. Hey, thanks so much for calling. Good
Thank
night.
You very much.
Well, this is Dr. Stanley. Is this Steve calling from New York?
Yes, good evening.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing fair to middling. Yourself?
No, as well as can be expected. I always enjoy the open lines. I hope you do, too.
Yes, three things to banter here on the picnic table. First of all, I got a kick out of your phone screener. He was telling me he knows you for 40 years, and he referred to himself as a lowly carpenter. But remember, guess who was a carpenter?
Amen to that. And he's
Jesus.
A good man, a good friend, and he was a great carpenter.
Yes. Okay, my second thing, just to pass along some news. I believe I heard on the news today, the secular news, that New Jersey Supreme Court is now giving the okay for same-sex get-togethers, marriages, if you will. And also the Attorney General, Elliot Spitzer in New York, who's running for governor, I believe is pro-gay marriage. So people want to make note of that, I believe, and make a double check to make sure I am correct. When you go to ballots, on election day. And the third thing, I have a friend, a lady friend, and when I come over to her house, she constantly critiques me of my relationship with Jesus. And I tell her it's personal, and she keeps on bantering and badgering me. Is that right? I tell her it's personal. She tries to give me some advice, but she sometimes goes overboard and yelling at me. Is that right? Should I just tell her it's between me and Jesus?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And the thing is that you do not want to be in a relationship with somebody who is not a Christian, because it will lead to nothing but.
Well, she's a Christian. She's a Christian, but she tends to critique my life too much. And I tell her, my relationship, I'm not as, she's a very good Christian lady. She reads the Bible every day, but then she starts, I'm saying, I'm taking it at my pace. I'm trying to, be a better person and a better Christian, but she sometimes goes overboard. What should I tell her?
Tell her that you're going to have to leave me alone. If I want to talk about religion with you, we will talk about it.
Okay.
But do not let anybody badger you on your faith. Hey, we're just out of time, Steve.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good night. And let's go quickly to Laverne, who's calling from Spokane. Laverne, anything quick here? We're just about out of time.
Okay. We've got to take the Republican Party back, and we've got to protect Abraham Lincoln's party. We have to be careful who we vote for and then get after them after they are elected. When we elect a new president, we can change things. It'll take time. But it's the Democrats that have set up all this mess. And
hold that thought for just a moment here, Laverne. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We've got Laverne, of course. Laverne is saying that we have to take back the Republican Party. Do you think the Republican Party is ever going to change? The leadership of this party is bought and paid for. They've got countless millions of dollars, and it's not coming from people like you and me. I'm not sure that either party is salvageable. I think it may be time for a third party.
Dr. Stan, is it the bureaucrats that have so much power?
No, it's the people who put up the money to buy the politicians. We have the finest politicians money could buy in Washington, D.C.
Isn't Congress responsible for our tax dollars?
No, of course not. That whole thing is controlled by the people who put up the big bucks, who own the congressmen. And they really do. They've compromised many of them. How long do you think they've known Foley Congressman Foley was a homosexual and a pedophile? They'd known it for a long period of time. But I will tell you, he always voted the way he was supposed to. for fear of being exposed.
Well,
and there are a lot of them back there like that. Hey, we're out of time.
The Democrats don't resign. They just stay there when they get caught.
Right, of course. And of course, we've got real problems with both political parties. Thanks very much for calling, Laverne.
You're welcome.
Call early next week and we can talk. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we would really appreciate your help at this time if you possibly can help us. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really should. You should get these new videos we're carrying. Ones like 911 Press for the Truth. Terror Storm by Alex Jones. In Plain Sight. And then, of course, the 911, The Day That Changed America Forever. Those four videos are the last one's a video, the other three are on DVD, will give you tremendous insight into what really happened at that fateful day. And then, of course, we have some great material on Mercury, and we have four tape sets and videos and books, and we have four tape sets and DVDs and books on fluoride, and we have the same thing on aspartame. You can go to our website or simply give us a call and get this material. If we could just get people to begin to understand they're poisoning our children with mercury, they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation, they're poisoning our children with NutraSweet and MSG, and they know exactly what they're doing. Why do you think it is that when our students graduate from high school and are tested competitively with students from the rest of the world, our students can't compete effectively? And believe me, it's not simply because we got a poor educational system, which we do, but the last thing they want you to know is what actually Bertrand Russell said in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, and I think it's page 53, but if you want the page, we can send it to you, where he said, by diet, injections, and injunctions, we will mold the minds of the children so they would never think at all of opposing what their teachers have taught them. That's what it's all about. And, of course, when they're teaching them to be dumbed down, to be subservient, and they're really destroying the minds of our children. 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neural developmental abnormality. Do you really believe that's just by accident? 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality of one sort or another. It did not happen by accident. We're up against organized evil. When you understand that, it really begins to make sense. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we hope many of you will want to get the book we carry by Malachi Martin entitled Hostage to the Devil. And you can get that as a special with our four tape sets with Malachi. We've got a whole flock of great new tape sets. One of them, of course, is The Holocaust. Another one, of course, is entitled The Changing Church, The Impending Police State, Medical Myths and What You Need to Know, The North American Community and the Demise of National Sovereignty, and then, of course, the one we mentioned before, The Truth About the Holocaust. Well, we're going to be back here for another fascinating hour. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And hang on, we'll be back for another interesting hour, and we'll take open lines there, too. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, this hour we're going to be talking to Michael Shaw, and we're going to be talking about the election coming up here in the Monterey Bay area, actually in California, on November 7th. But we thought we'd just go through and talk about, in general terms, some of what the ballot initiatives are. And if we have time, we can talk about the race for governor, and for lieutenant governor, and the other offices here. And this may not be as much interest to many of the people out across America, but it's so vitally important that people here in California have some idea of what the various issues are. And maybe we can talk about the general principles that are involved in this. Now, our Proposition 1A. Are you there, Michael? Michael, are you there? Michael Shaw, are you there? Is our guest here? I don't know where Michael is. Let's see. Michael, are you there? Well, I'm going to have to see if we can. I'm going to ask my producer to call Michael Shaw back again and get him on the line so we can talk to him. And we're just going to go through the various ballot initiatives. The Proposition 1A has to do with transportation funding and protection bond. And basically what it is that the politicians steal the money, because we pay a lot of money on gasoline taxes, and it's supposed to go for our roads. It's supposed to go for the upkeep of, you know, the maintenance of our roads and our bridges and things of that sort. And, of course, what happens is the government goes ahead and steals money. Hi, Michael, are you there?
I am here now, Stan. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. We'll get you on to Line 6 a little later. But right now, let's just go right ahead. And so I thought maybe we'd just start with the ballot initiatives. And, of course, the 1A is an effort to try to keep the legislature from stealing the tax money. And this is really what happens. Now, you remember Jimmy Baker, because he was the evangelist who really had an empire. He actually was on television, and he and his wife, were just Tammy and Bob and Jimmy Baker. They were a great team, and they were pulling in money hand over fist, but Jimmy Baker made a mistake. He took money out of one trust fund and used it for another trust fund, and the federal government came after and sent him to prison for taking money out of one trust fund and putting it and using it for another purpose. Our politicians do that all the time. They've been stealing all the money out of the transportation trust fund and just simply stealing it and not giving it back. Well, the new initiative, this is Proposition 1A, says that it's going to be more difficult for them. If they cannot take the money out of the trust fund. If they do take it out, it has to be declared an emergency and it has to be paid back within 2 years, and they can't do it more than twice in 10 years, and they can't keep stealing the money from the trust fund. What are your thoughts on that, Michael?
Well, Stan, this is one of the few propositions that makes sense. So all these propositions labeled number 1A through E, are brought by the legislature. The legislature is actually bringing this one, and of the total of 13 propositions, it's one of three that seem to me to make any sense at all. You know, the problem continues with this one. You know, it's all gas tax funding. That's what funds up this fund. And what we're seeing with other maneuverings that are going on in this state is that our gas taxes through local propositions are being diverted to bicycle trails and rail lines and walking paths and are not going into the development or the maintenance of the source of those funds, which is the use of gasoline, which motors vehicles down a road. So the road users continue to face having their money ripped off, even with this passing. But this takes away one of the giant loopholes the legislature has used. You go and pay your 50 cents or whatever it is, a gallon, for your gasoline, and they take that money and put it to their pet projects, and it doesn't maintain the roads that you think it's being used for by virtue of your having paid it. And
that's basically what you're suggesting is a yes vote on 1A.
Yes, vote on 1A. Makes some sense.
All right, fine. And so basically, the politicians never have enough money. What do they do with the money? They give it to their friends under one guise or another. They raise their own salaries. They give it, of course, to the poor, to the needy. Of course, it never gets to the poor and the needy. Most of it doesn't. And if it does, of course, it makes them dependent upon government. So at least what this will do, hopefully, we'll be able to keep most of the money that is taken from us under gasoline taxes to be used on roads, to force them to use it on roads. So that's a pretty good idea, I think. So on 1A, where we have a yes.
But again, I'll just remind the listeners, whether you're in California or anywhere, our road taxes, even if they're not taken for totally unrelated transportation expenditures, even under this proposition, it will take our road taxes and put it to the new world sustainable development transportation projects, meaning rail, bicycles, and walking paths. And our roads will continue to have potholes as long as that happens. So this is step one, I think, in a two-step process to restore our transportation taxes to what they're intended to be used for.
All right. Fine. I think that probably what is perfectly all right. Now, the 1B is the Highway Safety Traffic Reduction Air Quality and Port Security Bond Act of 2006. And basically what they want is to put up, 25...
That's a $20
billion
bond.
$20 billion, right.
Yeah.
And, of course, it'll cost us $40 billion when we pay it back over 30 years. And they want that to go ahead and of course, to build up our highways. And yet, of course, they've been stealing the money all along, so I'm not going to give them any more money. How do you feel about it?
Well, you know, first, I think a voter has to step back and say, well, what really is the financing behind these bonds? And what does a bond mean? You know, when they go out to pass these bonds, they love to say, no tax increase. As though the money floats down from heaven with no consequence. You know, when you pass these bonds, $20 billion on this particular bond, it's a 30-year payback. The total payback from the taxpayer is $40 billion. Well, gee, that's a lot of money, you might say. And you got to ask yourself, what's the total status of bonds? And are we creating ourselves a debt coffin? You know, California has the worst credit rating in the whole country.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we're talking about, of course, Proposition 1B. And they want to put an extra $20 billion into the roads. Now, they should have done this a long time ago, but they spent it on all sorts of other programs. They spent it on an educational system that's failing. We put out $10 billion a year in California on the illegal immigration, which is being encouraged by the people of the state legislature. And now they want these bonds, of course, $20 billion to repair the highways, which they've refused to do in the past because they spent the money for all these other foolish projects. I don't trust them with the money, and my personal feeling is if we give them the money, they're going to use it, of course, for all sorts of boondoggles. We may very well need repairs of our highways. But they already have the gasoline taxes. Why don't we use what we already have instead of trying to get more? So how do you feel about 1B?
Well, I think we need to pay for our road improvements as we go. Pay as you go. And, taking this debt, another $20 billion up, there's presently $100 billion in bond debt in this state. And there's a $44 billion worth of bond debt on this ballot alone. So if all that passes, we're going to be paying over $8 billion a year out of our general fund just to pay the interest and debt on these bond indebtedness dynamics.
You said it's going to be how much interest every single year?
$8 billion.
Now,
of the debt, and about half of that is interest.
And I think what people
have
to...
And that comes out of our general tax fund.
I think that people have to understand that Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to get some legislation through about a year and a half ago that really was pretty good. Most of it was fairly conservative. And when all of those issues, bond issues, went down, why, of course, then he did a 180-degree flip. He took the personal advisor to Gray Davis, who Arnold Schwarzenegger had defeated. In fact, Gray Davis had actually been recalled. he took Ray Davis's assistant as his assistant, and the whole idea was to spend us into oblivion. You can create artificial prosperity by spending a lot of borrowed money. And any one of us can live very well spending borrowed money, and especially if we're not going to have to be around when that money has to be paid back. This is the most fiscally irresponsible budget I've ever seen. These bond issues, of course, are going to bankrupt our society, and where is the outcry?
Well, and what I like to remind people of, I mean, most of us baby boomers a generation ago were told, oh, the problems are out there on the horizon, but they're far past the life of baby boomers. You know, the sad and the real news is, if you're a baby boomer, it is not a financial bust that is going to occur beyond our lifespan. It's going to happen within our lifespan, and time is getting closer because the burden is just becoming overwhelming. Federal, state, local burdens, the total elasticity of the dollar, it's being stretched into oblivion to satisfy all of these wish lists. While the legislatures spend over $100 billion a year of our tax money, and they can't keep the roads clean, they have to raid out the tax funds for things like road improvements. You know, we are just acting like drunken sailors.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to participate in our discussion on any of these issues, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So I assume that you are recommending a no on 1B?
Well, you know, no is going to become the frequent call if you're going to ask my opinion on these measures. Most of them are tax increases and or bond levies, and there are things that ought to be being done by the legislature in the ordinary course of business. If they've cleaned up their act, they'd have room to do that.
And, of course, the thing is that basically they're selling the people of the state of California, this isn't going to cost you any money. It's free money. It's not going to raise taxes at all. As if somehow this is just manna from heaven. You're borrowing the money, and whatever you borrow, you got to pay back twice as much over a 30-year period. But, you know, there's some people who are so gullible, they honestly believe what it says on the ballot. And then, of course, let's get to 1C, which is, of course, the Housing and Emergency Shelter Trust Fund Act of 2006, and for the purpose of providing shelters for battered women and their children, and clean and safe housing for low-income senior citizens, and home ownership assistance for the disabled. Now, those sound like very, very worthy projects.
Well, you know, Stan, it would sound like a really worthy project if you were living in the Soviet Union and you could find the money to do these kinds of things. Increasingly, because we do have this, you know, money that falls from sky, this is a $3 billion bond, we debase our currency and destroy the stature of the people in our neighborhoods. Local communities throughout this state, no better example than Santa Cruz, have precluded the development of housing units for people on most landscapes in this state. And as a consequence, the price of our homes has doubled or tripled in the last decade. The homeowner feels real proud that he's got a $1 million house now that cost him $220,000. But it is leaving people out. But the reason people are being left out is because of this arbitrary and false dynamic to the prices that results from the limitation on being able to build homes.
In other words, what they have really done is create artificial shortages by not allowing people to build the homes. You create shortages, and of course the value goes up. And of course, but what we've done is exclude many, many deserving people who'd like to live here. They quite frankly can't afford to. But, of course, we're not going to help people by putting up another couple of billion dollars, pretty close to almost $3 billion, then we've got to pay it back again. Well, of course, then 1D is the Kindergarten University Public Education Facilities Bond Act of 2004. And this is a $10 billion, $416 million a bond issue to provide needed funding to relieve public school overcrowding and to repair older schools It will improve the earthquake safety, and of course, it's going to be wonderful for the kids. So we're going to have to put out another $10 billion, which is going to cost us $20 billion to pay it back. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have a failed educational system. How many of the schools that we're having to put in now are for the children of people who are in this country illegally? And we already, as I've said earlier, put out $10 billion in California every year to take care of the illegal immigrants who are here. And now we want to build additional schools for them. And, of course, we borrow this $10 billion, we spend it, and then we got to pay back $20 billion. This whole thing is designed to bankrupt California. There's no other logical explanation. And Arnold Schwarzenegger knows what's going on. In fact, once he gets this through, he's going to go after another $50 billion. What they're planning is $100 billion borrowed money with the idea that they'll pay it back sometime in the future when Arnold won't have to be here to play the music or to face the music, as it were.
Well, you know, California has existed for over 150 years, and we've had government schools all along, but those government schools have never been paid with future tax obligations. They're paid with on a pay-as-you-go basis. You know, buried in this legislation is all kinds of stuff for the new sustainable development educational program, like small learning communities. That's where they put your child out in this small little group because he's been identified as a potential actor. So they train him up to be an actor, never mind learning the three R's. You know, they might give them a little bit of reading examples, but they're not going to give them true lessons in history because, after all, this little child's been identified in a small learning community as tomorrow's actor. And there's tons of money being allocated in this proposition for just that kind of New World Order educational process. So not only is it financially abhorrent, it is philosophically rife with problems.
Has anybody ever heard a situation where the school said, we've got plenty of money, we don't want any more money? You're never going to hear that. It's always, gimme, 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 gimme.
Well, I remember, Stan, in the late 90s, California schools were actually funding less than the national average on a per-child basis, you know, somewhere around $4,700. I don't think that included the capital costs of the school's facilities itself. But now that number, in less than a decade, has doubled. You see any improvement in California schools? No, they are still ranked toward the very bottom. There is something philosophically wrong with how California schools are operated. More money is only going to make that philosophy envelop worse results, not better ones.
All right, fine. If you're out there in the listening audience, you disagree, why, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, the next one is a very interesting one, and this is 1E, because it's the Disaster Preparedness and Flood Prevention Bond Act of 2006. And the act actually rebuilds and repairs California's most vulnerable flood control structures to protect homes and prevent loss of life from flooding. And basically, of course, a large part of the Central Valley of California is protected by levees. And apparently these levees are not in very, very good shape. They need to be repaired. And certainly the UROC organization, which is a very, very conservative organization I'm affiliated with and often is asked to speak at, they've evaluated this, and of all the bond issues, this is the only one that they support. And they feel that, and I'll read what they say, almost all of this money goes for levee construction that our great-grandchildren will use. Why should anyone outside Sacramento care? Well, collapse of the state water project and billions of dollars of state liabilities paid by all taxpayers could ensue. This is a classic example of a prevention saving a pound of cure. So when we get back, we'll get Michael's opinion on that one right here at Radio Liberty. But we're talking about, of course, about $40 billion of bonded indebtedness, and the politicians assure us it's not going to cost us any money at all. It's absolutely free. It's just the money's going to come out, be borrowed, and of course, it will not increase our taxes. Well, that, of course, is a lie. Is there any of this that's worthwhile? Well, if there's any of it's worthwhile, it may be this one Proposition 1E. We'll get Michael's opinion on that when we get back here at Radio Liberty in just a moment. If you have an opinion, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we saw what happened in New Orleans when they did not take care of the levees, when they looked to the government to do it, and when the levees, of course, gave way, it was a disaster for New Orleans. Could the same thing happen in the Central Valley of California? Should we try to repair the levees on our own? Should we wait for the government to do it? Or should we go ahead and announce a prevention worth a pound of cure? What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, again, I'm bothered by future payment for today's benefit. I think a better argument's made for the need to reconstruct these levees, but in the arguments against this, the statement is that the funding is for about 25 miles of levee, despite the fact that California has more than 2,000 miles of levees to maintain. So the levee issue is a big issue, and it's one that local governments, local farm associations, local taxpayers, and the state legislature all need to make sense. But to think that we can go along and fall into a pattern of ignoring potential problems for a long period of time and then wave the magic wand and let somebody pay it off 30 years from now is a very dangerous thing, I think, for the state of California to continue to fall deeper and deeper into. It's just too easy, therefore, not to pay attention to the building of problems, because you just wave this magic wand at the end of the road, you know, and you get this free money falling from heaven. And it's just a principle in local government. It doesn't work. I don't think it works in the federal government. I think all of America is going to learn that lesson. But states traditionally have not borrowed to pay for current benefit. And I'm sort of stuck on that.
All right, fine. That's fine. Well, let's get to the next proposition, which is Proposition 83. Now, for our listeners across America, this is Jessica's Law. And it, of course, has to do with a little girl who was molested and killed by a child molester. And it places on the ballot an initiative that the legislature failed to act on. And it's named for a little Florida girl who was killed by a released sex offender. Here, of course, Proposition 83 prohibits felony registered sex offenders from living within 2,000 feet of schools or park and requires a lifetime GPS monitoring. Now, it's going to cost several million dollars, maybe even $100 million, to monitor the sex offenders here in California. But is it worth it to protect our children? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that the problem with this is that when a person commits a crime, they are charged, convicted, and they pay their price for the crime by going to jail for a term. Sometimes that term is for life, but generally it's for a lesser term. When a person is released from jail, they're released with the view that their life begins again. Now, repeat offenders we've dealt with the three strikes, you're out. And I think that's a more effective way of dealing with repeat sexual offenders than to engage in what very arguably is cruel and unusual punishment. You know, not only are these people going to be monitored for the rest of their life with some sort of technological device.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Michael Shaw about, of course, Jessica's Law, Proposition 83, on the ballot here in California, and it is that certainly anybody who is a sex offender, who's been convicted as a sex offender here in California, when they're released from prison, are going to have a GPS, a satellite, tracking system on where that, so they'll know where they are all the time. They're not to be 2,000 feet from a school at any time. And, of course, we have a real problem. For instance, there was a young lady named Polly Class here in California. The man who killed Polly was just out of prison. He'd been convicted, I think, 30 or 35 times, and always got out of prison. I mean, it seemed like the judges could just want to let him out. I mean, here was a guy who was a repeated sex offender, and there was no way that they were going to enforce the laws and keep him in prison until he killed Polly Klass. And we have a real problem with our courts, because we have people within the judicial system who do not believe in enforcing the law. And, of course, this is why, at least at the federal level, they've come up with some of these mandatory sentences, simply because they couldn't trust the judges to be logical. And, of course, now, of course, we've got people coming out of prison who are sex offenders, and many of them do commit crimes over and over again, because when you're a sexual predator, you have something seriously wrong with your mind. I'm not sure that these people should ever be released from prison. I do not believe that they can be allowed to be around children. This is the great problem we face. So, but you're against Jessica's law. Is this your thought on it, Michael?
Yes, I am. You know, and this is a bit overreaching, too, because it takes some rather minor offenses and subjects people to it. It also creates, out of this class of people, an indentured servitude, because they're the ones who've got to pay in accordance with what their capacity to pay is to fund up this program. So, gee whiz, there are people who make a mistake, learn their lesson, pay their price, and come out of jail, and then they are indentured servants to the Jessica's law for the rest of their life, and they're monitored and controlled. And once we start it here, we're going to start it with all kinds of activities where people are monitored, and pretty soon the government's going to have a monitor on all of us.
All right, so I will, Chris, if you would like to know if you agree or disagree with Michael on this. This is a very, very sensitive issue. Our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, don't you think maybe in many ways this would encourage sexual predators to actually move to other states? It would be rid of them. We wouldn't have to worry about them here.
Well, if that's what's motivating this legislation, that would start a very unhealthy dynamic between the states. We'll end up as 50 independent nations, perhaps. Maybe that wouldn't be so bad, but I don't think that's the way to get there.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course, the Proposition 84 is the park bond, and it's an initiative status, and, of course, I'm not sure what the park bond is, but I'm sure it's going to be expensive. Everything, it seems. This whole thing is simply a grab bag for the politicians, how they can get more and more money from the individual. This one is about a $5 billion bond that will cost us $10 billion to pay it back. So I assume that on Proposition 84, it would be a no vote.
Well, you know, this one deserves a little extra comment, because this is a pure sustainable development initiative. It's not about buying parks, okay? It's about things like the biggest dollar amount goes to integrated regional water management. Now, here in Santa Cruz, you know, that talk is, you know, behind, closed doors all the time about how there is a plan to integrate the water agencies through three counties into one. Now, that's part, you know, Jeannie Soderman, who's on your show regularly, and she talks about the World Bank water policy. That's what the World Bank water policy calls for, is an integrated water plan that continues to grow until it reaches continental levels. And when you've got it all under this single authority, then it's 10 gallons per person per day. That's down from 140 gallons, which is what the average Californian uses. So the idea of taxing ourselves in the future, giving $1.7 billion for the advance of integrated regional water plans, is the most dangerous thing on the entire ballot.
All right, so I assume then that is a no vote.
That one's an absolute no vote.
All right, an absolute no vote. And, of course, we're talking about the various propositions we have here in California, but the principles are exactly the same. Because, of course, there is a group of people who wish to bankrupt our nation, and we're simply going to spend America into oblivion. There is no way California is ever going to be able to pay back these bonds. If I would suggest, do not buy California bonds, because, of course, the only way to actually pay them back will simply be destroy the value of the dollar and pay them back with worthless money. Argentina's recently actually gone back on their debt, and I think we're going to see increasingly people, of course, reneging on their debts. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we go on to the next one. That's attack on the Proposition 85. And, of course, let's see now. Did we do 85? 85 was, oh, 85 was the a waiting period and parental notification for termination of a minor's pregnancy. And I assume then that it means that at least one of the parents has to be notified if an underage girl is going to get get an abortion. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there was a time in my life when, certainly when I was a teenager, the thought that I could go and have a major medical procedure without my parents knowing about it would have been preposterous. And it's ridiculous to me today, but it does show how society has changed. You know, this one, for me, is a no-brainer. All it does is it requires the parents must be notified that the child is seeking an abortion. Of course, then that allows the parents to exercise their parental judgment and parental direction and parental love with respect to their child and her predicament.
All right, fine. So I'm assuming then that you're suggesting a yes vote on that one?
For me, that one is very easy. Of course, the opposition on that says that the people who oppose this proposition say, well, but what about those parents, those fathers who are abusive? You know, that's sort of like saying, well, in order to free the slaves, let's just enslave everybody. You know, you don't make all parents, the 99.9% of the parents who are loving, you know, there are various quality of parenting in the state, but most parents are loving parents, and to say because one out of 10,000 is not loving and in fact may be abusive, that no parent should have notification of their child's predicament is just absurd.
And I think that, of course, in states where they actually have this legislation, I've heard that there's a much lower rate of illegitimate pregnancies because the children realize their parents are kind of find out, and there's no way to sneak off and have an abortion without anybody knowing about it. And they teach them in school abortion is simple and safe, and there's nothing to it. You know, you get it done, and your problem's gone, and it's not.
But it also means,
with you the rest of your life.
As the proposition ballot points out that most of the impregnators are young adult men, and you know, as long as the abortion is quiet and safe,
hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're just discussing the ballot that's coming up next week. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, you disagree on this. Then, of course, Proposition 86 is certainly a very interesting proposition because it's going to put a considerable increased tax on packages of cigarettes. The tobacco companies have spent $50 million fighting it. The people, the hospitals and other groups are going to benefit from the several billion dollars a year that's going to be raised. It'll put a lot of money into it. It's probably the most heavily contested issue on the ballot, either Proposition 86 or 87, but Proposition 86 is to raise the taxes on cigarettes, and supposedly to cut down on smoking, get the tax up high enough, at least some people are going to stop smoking. Of course, the objections to it is, well, only 10% of the money that comes in is going to be used for, you know, education, but that's going to be over, you know, about $200 million a year is going to be used on anti-tobacco education. That's a lot of money. The rest of the money is going to go to hospitals and to other groups, of course, that are taking care of people. At least that's supposedly the way it is. So basically it's a battle between the tobacco manufacturers and people. Perhaps some of them are motivated more that they want to get their hands part of that tax money that's going to come in. How are you going to vote on 86? Because that's a very contentious issue.
Well, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, but that doesn't mean that I want to start finding narrow groups of people to pay enormous burdens. California hospitals are in trouble. Okay, it's the California hospital system that is behind this. It's $2.60 per pack of additional tax. Most of the reward of that tax goes to the hospitals. Now they're in deep trouble because they're giving free medical care to millions of illegal immigrants in this state. It has, as my deceased good friend Madeline Cosman says, I've forgotten the number. Dozens of hospitals in this state have closed for financial reasons as a result of that burden placed on them. So now they're turning around and they're going to place the burden on the taxpayer, on the smokers in this state. And that's just not the way to run tax policy. Find a narrow group, tax them to heck, and to make up for other errors of public policy. It's the wrong way to go. And clearly anybody who smokes, before they pay $2.60 per pack of tax, they're just going to buy the bootlegged cigarette product that comes in from out of state. They're not going to buy it through routine.
All right, fine. Well, if there's anybody who'd like to comment on this, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, on most things, Michael and I would agree totally. On this one, this is a very, very tough one because I initially was going to vote a no on 86. But, you know, when I stop and think of all the harm that tobacco smoking does, now I've never smoked either, but I've seen so many people die of cancer of the lung, cancer of the pancreas, cancer of the bladder, directly related to this. I've seen so many people crippled from a pulmonary point of view. And even though I really am very much against using taxes for public policy, if this will save a number of lives, which it will, because admittedly, a lot of these people are going to buy, a bootleg cigarettes, and it may be like prohibition. But I'll tell you what, if it wasn't going to have an impact on the tobacco sales, the tobacco companies wouldn't be putting out $50 million to try to defeat it. So, I mean, it's a battle between this, the hospitals who want the money and the tobacco companies that want the money. Neither one of them may be, very well be altruistic in their purposes at all. But of course, as a physician, I'm going to vote yes. I acknowledge Michael's arguments are all very, very valid. But I'm going to vote yes because I just hope it'll discourage people from smoking. It'll be interesting to see what happens on Election Day. So Michael and I are going to split on that, and the rest of the things we're just about right on. Let's get to Proposition 87. And this is the one that Bill Clinton is pushing, let's claim the future, let's tax the oil companies. Now, I don't like the oil companies. I think they're pretty corrupt. But are really going to solve our problems here in California with energy, with windmills and with solar. I will tell you that it's as far as I'm concerned, this is a great scam. And I believe, of course, that, well, let's get your thoughts on how do you feel on Proposition 87, which, of course, is to put massive taxes onto the oil industry.
Well, as a starting point, I have the same view on this one as I do on the last one. You don't pick out a segment of the population and nail them. In the case of smokers, it's because, it's not good for their health. In the case of oil companies, it's because, nobody likes oil companies, so nail the oil companies. But what we're really doing here is seeing the development of public policy along public public-private partnership basis. What we're doing is we're seeing this tax gleaned off the oil industry and stuffed into the friends of the public sector who are working in private enterprise but who are unable to raise their own money because their ideas haven't shown themselves to be good enough. So what do? Well, you go out and you tax some third party and then let the government give it to their friends. This is public policy at its worst.
All right, I agree with you totally, and I think that Proposition 87 deserves a no vote. Anyway, Proposition 88, the educational funding, real property parcel tax initiative, and, of course, another gimmick to get money. They want a $50 tax on each real property parcel to provide additional public school funding for kindergarten through grade 12. How do you feel about that?
Well, this one is the latest, cutest ever attack on Proposition 13. Because this applies statewide and not locally, they're able to get this approved with a 50% vote. All other property tax assessments require a two-thirds vote under Prop 13. So the goal here for the taxers is to find a way to cave in Prop 13. Again, I attribute this to the sustainable developers in office and in power in California, because Prop 13 is just, you know, that's their boogeyman. That's what they've got to get rid of, because at the bottom line, the goal of sustainable development is the elimination of private property. No better way to do that than to find a way to just continually attack and load up property owners with property taxes.
All right, fine. So I assume that's a no on that one.
That's a definite no.
All right, that's Proposition 88. Now, 89 is political campaign, public financing, corporate tax increase, and basically it provides for the eligible candidates for state elective offices may receive public campaign funding, increases taxes on corporations and financial institutions by only 0.2% to fund a program, imposes a new campaign contribution expenditure limit. So basically what it's going to actually increasing the control over the electoral process, and it's all going to be done because it's not going to cost us anything. It's going to be the corporations. How do you feel on that?
Well, you know, it has a nice ring to it, but it really is Sovietizing the electoral process. Now, I'm not defending the current electoral process, but what this does is says that you can't make contributions. Other people can't make contributions. Instead, we're all going to be taxed, and the money's going to be divvied up in a particular way. But there's a couple of giant loopholes that serves a very narrow interest in this state. First loophole is that it says that as under current law, individuals could make unlimited independent expenditures if they spent the money on their own without the use of a committee. Basically, the act says you can contribute into a committee, and that's the way this money will get focused and funneled. But the exception for really big contributors is you can skip all of that and just go direct. The second loophole is that nonprofit corporations, meeting certain requirements, oh boy, it makes me nervous, would not be subject to the restriction about supporting or opposing ballot measures with large contributions. So it's not a pure socialist funding policy for elections. It's nearly pure, but it's got these couple of exceptions that'll let some interests who are behind writing this, I'm sure, continue to have their way without competition.
All right, fine. So I assume that's a no vote?
I like to vote no on propositions.
All right, let's go to number 90 now. Number 90 is a very interesting one because it's sort of getting around to this whole idea of the government being able to take our private property. This is an answer to the Supreme Court Kelo decision, and basically it bars state or local government from condemning or damaging private property to promote other private projects. And of course it limits the government's authority to adopt certain land use, housing, consumer, environmental, workplace, and regulations. So how do you feel on that?
Well, you know, I like to defend families, parenthood. I like to defend private property, and I like to see a government that operates within constitutional constraints. So I've got one initiative fitting each of those categories in this whole ballot, and this is the one that satisfies the property rights dynamic. Kelo was probably, and its predecessor, Chevron versus Lingle in Hawaii, coming out a couple months earlier, are probably the combined two worst court cases in the history of America. It undermines our entire basis. Without private property, there is no America. and, you know, like,
and this is exactly what the tyrants would want, is to take away a right to private property and to impoverish our people. And this is at least a step in the right direction. And what's so interesting is that states all across America, something like 26 states, have passed legislation to limit the ability of the state or the local government to take away your property for transferring to others. It's one thing when, of course, you're going to use it for public purpose. For instance, you're going to use it for a school, or you're going to use it for, you know, for a highway. But simply to take it away from one person to give it to another, because, of course, oh, my goodness, they'll be able to put a nice building in. We'll get more in the way of taxes, and it has no... It has nothing to do with public use. It has to do with a public advantage. And I think they just sort of changed one word in this whole idea. And what it's done is allow local public officials to take away your property and give it to their friends who they're in bed with. And I think that Kelo, this whole idea of taking people's property to give it to the politicians' friends, they're not going to admit that they're their friends. They're not going to admit they're getting campaign contributions and payoffs. Why, no, we're here in the government, and we're here to help. So I think that this is a very, very important issue. It may be the most important, one of the most important issues on the ballot, and I think that most of the things deserve our resounding no. Would you agree,
Michael? This one deserves a resounding no. The unfortunate
No, this part, one deserves a resounding yes.
I mean, resounding yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, thank you. I get confused.
I know.
How the ballot is proposition is posed. Now, this one's a yes, but it's got huge forces against it. The sustainable developers and the sitting politicians don't want their dynamic of give and take. You know, you give me the contribution and I'll take the development right, abandoned. And while this has been in the California Constitution and the U.S. Constitution since the inception of both the state and the nation, it has been abandoned as a concept for the last couple of decades. And Kelo, everybody thought Kelo was going to go the other way. Kelo just legitimized this insider trading for private gain at taxpayer expense, at citizen expense. You know, here in Santa Cruz, board supervisors in the process, they may have completed it by now, of identifying 150 single-family home parcels that are built and occupied as being, quote, underutilized. These usually are at the entrance to a particular neighborhood, and what the county wants to do is put multiple units on these key parcels, I presume so that they can set up their little floor ladies, kind of watch what goes on in the neighborhood, and report in as they need to. But you see, without the protections of the private property constitutional provisions, or without the protection now of Proposition 90, they can do that. With Proposition 90 in place, they can't have their little side deals with their little favored developers, their little sustainable developers, where they go in and condemn the property and let their guy come in at taxpayer expense.
What really amazed me, Michael, was all the people who were against what I think is a very, very logical piece of legislation. I mean, why are all these people, all of these major organizations, on the wrong side on this issue?
Well, I think it depends upon who that organization is. You know, certainly most developers, most businessmen, free enterprise developers are totally for this. The big guys who partner up with the government are against it. Now, also who's against it are those who don't understand the virtue of private property and who say things like this. This is in the argument against Proposition 90 in the election summary. It says that with no limit on total cost, Proposition 90 traps taxpayers into signing a blank check. Well, that's like saying, gee, if we make thieves responsible for their theft, and having the thief stand up and say, well, you can't do that. I don't know how much that might be, because I don't know how much I'm going to steal.
I mean, I think that they use all of these sophistic arguments because, of course, the politicians hate this idea. They want to be able to steal your property, and this is what politics is all about. How you can get into government and you can enrich yourself. And I think it was Mark Twain who said that no man's life or property are safe when the legislature is in session. It was either that or Will Rogers, but I think it's just as true, whoever said it. No man's life or property are safe when the legislature is in session. It was certainly Congressman Ron Paul said that the day that Congress does the most for the populace is the day of the Republican-Democrat baseball game when Congress is adjourned. And you have to understand that our founding fathers recognized the danger of government because they knew men were basically and philosophically corrupt and they would always take advantage of other men. And so why would you give men power over other people's lives? Freedom means restricting the power of government and specifically restricting their ability to take away your land. I think this is a very important proposition, and don't be dissuaded by all the lies that they're putting out. Hopefully. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes. If you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I think probably one of the most important things we have not